the basis of our harmonic system? The great bulk of the music we hear is based upon the concept called tonality. That can best be demonstrated as follows. The need for that phrase to end on one final chord, that one and no other, demonstrates the concept of tonality. Whatever that final note is, determines what we call the key of the phrase. That last note happens to be a C, and the work is said to be in the key of C. A composition usually begins and ends in the same key, and that key is called the tonic, and determines what's known as the tonality. Needless to say, very few compositions, except perhaps the simplest children's songs and folk songs, remain in any one key for too long a time. Notice to what an extent we depend upon this harmonic interest for our musical gratification. Here's the melody alone of the slow movement of Beethoven's so-called Appassionata Sonata. By itself, there's nothing very special about this melody just as a tune. Suppose we repeat that melody, this time with the chords that Beethoven wrote as accompaniment. Notice how much more interesting, how much richer this music becomes with its harmonies, just because it touches upon so many different keys. Melody, no matter how far afield it went in matters of harmony, returned to the key in which it started. Thus we have a sense of completion because of the adherence to a tonality. Especially in the period of Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven, the so-called classic period, harmony contributed to the structure of a work in another way as well. Notice the effect of this chord, which is built on the first, third, and fifth notes of the scale, but with the seventh degree added as well. Notice that it leaves us with a sense of unrest, and in addition, it almost dictates what the next chord shall be in order that we might have a sense of resolution. This so-called dominant seventh chord wants to resolve to this. Well, there, in essence, we find the concept of harmony being used partly as a factor in the determination of form. But with later composers, such as Debussy, we find harmony being used more for its purely instantaneous, coloristic, and sensuous effects, as in this excerpt from his Girl with the Flaxen Hair. Famous passage that led to the breakdown of tonality. The melody that Beethoven might have harmonized like this, with a strong sense of tonality, in Wagner's hands was harmonized like this, so that our sense of tonality is left to swim around ambiguously with this final chord. Thank you. with that chord in this work, Wagner's Tristano und Isolde, we had the opening of the door to modern harmony. One of the sources of interest in any music is its texture, which might be defined as the fabric of the music. There are basically three types of texture, and despite the frightening sound of their titles, they're really quite easy to understand. They are monophonic, homophonic, and polyphonic. The syllable phonic refers to sound. By extension, it means a voice in the sense of a part or a melody line, either sung or played on instruments. The prefix mono, of course, means one. Thus, when music consists of a single line of melody, that is, single sounds or a single part without accompaniment, its texture is said to be monophonic. Here's a good example.
O come, O come, Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel, that mourns in lowly exile here, until the Son of God appear. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel.
A melody played by any instrument, or by any combination of instruments or voices, would also exemplify the monophonic texture, provided that they all played the identical notes, and provided that there were no accompaniment. When a melody is accompanied by chords, the texture of the music is said to be homophonic.
La donna è mobile, qua fiuma il vento, muta d'accento e di pensiero.
And here's a purely instrumental example of homophonic writing. Music is in homophonic style when one melody predominates, while everything else is essentially accompaniment. This is the case even if the accompaniment is played by a full orchestra. In this portion of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, for example, the accompaniment is all really a background to the melody. Thus, despite the complexity of the accompaniment, the music here is in homophonic style. The nature of the third of the three textures, polyphonic, also can be gathered from the word itself. Poly means many, thus the word refers to many-voiced music, again remembering that a voice can be any vocal or instrumental part. A familiar example of polyphonic texture is the round Three Blind Mice. By contrast with the monophonic style of writing, in which many of the parts were really subordinate to one melody, here the interest is equally divided among all the parts. Actually, all of the singers are singing the same melody, but they all start at different times. Thus, at any given moment, each one is singing something different. Therefore, the texture is polyphonic.
Three blind mice. See how they run, see how they run. They all ran after the farmer's wife who cut off their tails at the corner.
Here's an instrumental example of a similar kind of polyphonic writing. Notice in the closing movement of César Franck's Sonata for Violin and Piano that the piano plays a melody and the violin plays the same melody starting a little later. This particular kind of polyphonic writing, in which a melody trails itself, is called a canon. Three Blind Mice was also a canon. Here's a canon for full orchestra in César Franck's Symphony in D minor. Notice that one section of the orchestra trails the other with the same melody. Every time you sing a round, like Three Blind Mice, or Row, Row, Row Your Boat, or Frère Jacques, you're actually singing a canon, or polyphonic music. If the melody of Three Blind Mice were to be treated homophonically, that is, if the single melody were given a position of supremacy, and were accompanied by chords, it would sound like this. When the melody is treated polyphonically as a canon, notice that the harmonies at any one moment are the incidental result of the coming together of the various strands of melody. Full appreciation of the polyphonic texture, the ear must forsake its tendency to listen mainly to the top melody and concentrate on all parts simultaneously, since the point of polyphonic music is that all parts are equally important. Sometimes a composer, following this idea of the equality of all the parts, writes music of considerable complexity. Bach, for example, in his Mass in B minor, has a section in which five parts start with the same melody in succession. Finally, all five parts are going simultaneously. Now, despite the complexity of this music, its constructive principle is the same as that governing Three Blind Mice. There's nothing about any melody that limits it to being treated only homophonically or only polyphonically. For example, let's take one of the melodies in the Roman Carnival Overture by Berlioz. Here's the way it first appears in a homophonic setting with the melody played by the English horn and the rest of the instruments just accompanying as a background. But later on, Berlioz treats the same melody polyphonically. Notice that it's heard in the brass and lower strings and trailed or echoed in the high strings. Later still, Berlioz gives us another treatment of the same melody. It begins in the bassoon. Then the first few notes of the melody are played in turn by the brass instruments and the woodwinds. In the examples of polyphonic music that we've heard so far, each of the selections has dealt with just a single melody. But why not expand the musical interest by combining two melodies? Well, Beethoven does just that in his Ninth Symphony. The most important and the best known melody is... Later on, Beethoven introduces another completely different melody. Later, he combines both melodies. The second one starts in the altos, and the first one begins a moment later in the sopranos. Then listen to the ways in which Beethoven keeps both melodies going simultaneously in the various voices. Going simultaneously. But there's nothing to prevent a composer from combining as many melodies as he wishes. Wagner, in the prelude to his music drama, Die Meistersinger, has three different melodies, which he ultimately combines. Here's the first one. The second melody is a fanfare featuring the brass instruments. Thank you. third melody is lyrical and flowing. At the climax of the piece, Wagner has all three melodies, or portions of them, going simultaneously. This section of the music bears listening to many times, so that you can hear all three melodies wherever they occur. In a very broad sense, we might say that the last six centuries of music have been characterized by constant fluctuations between the polyphonic and the homophonic schools. In the late 1600s, when vocal music was more developed than instrumental music was, the polyphonic school, or polyphony, reached one of its heights. Another pinnacle of polyphonic or contrapuntal writing occurred with Bach and his contemporaries in the first half of the 18th century. Haydn and Mozart, coming later in the 18th century, represented one of the shifts toward homophonic writing, and this trend was carried on into the early 19th century by Beethoven and his contemporaries. But it's most important to realize that while one or another school was in the ascendancy at any one period, this does not mean that the composers of that period wrote in only that style. In order to demonstrate that point, let me offer an example from a work by the man who is generally considered to represent the contrapuntal or polyphonic school at its height, Bach. Here's a portion of his Passion According to St. Matthew. Notice that it's written in the homophonic style, that is, one melody is predominant, while everything else is merely accompaniment. Thank you. Now, let's hear a portion of a symphony by one of the outstanding composers of the homophonic period, Beethoven. Here, in the slow movement of his Symphony No. 7, essentially a work in the homophonic style, he has a section that's unmistakably polyphonic or contrapuntal. Therefore, since there's a great deal of mixing of textures in all music, let me suggest that you not work hard at trying to categorize the texture of a piece of music. The composer's task is to try to make his music as appealing to you as possible. One of the ways in which he does that is to vary the textures, which in turn adds to the interest of the music.